player on this Sunday morning
on 720 WGN. In the new book, Southside Girls, Growing Up in the Great Migration, Professor Marcia Chatelain recasts Chicago's Great Migration through the lens of young black girls between 1910 and 1940, and how Chicago's black social scientists, urban reformers, journalists, and activists formulated a vulnerable image of urban black girlhood that needed protecting. Their powerful stories of hope, anticipation, and disappointment highlight their feelings and thoughts, and in so doing helps restore the experiences of an understudied population to the Great Migration's complex narrative. And joining us to break it all down is the author of this new book, Dr. Marcia Chatelain, Assistant Professor of History at Georgetown University. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. First, I have to ask you, what inspired you to write about this journey?
Well, I'm a Chicagoan. I grew up on actually the north side of Chicago in Rogers Park, attended local Catholic schools and St. Ignatius High School. So I'm first and foremost a Chicagoan. And so in a sense, this is my love letter to my city that I love so much. But more than anything else, I was incredibly concerned growing up in Chicago in the 80s and 90s. The number of conversations about African-American boys and young men, but very little conversation about the problems that girls went through. And so, in a sense, I was looking at my experiences growing up in Chicago and thinking backward to the moments where girls were a priority in terms of community development and community investment.
Well, you talked to right from the beginning of the book to set the tone. 4 days after the Chicago Fender declared May 15, 1917, the Great Northern Migration Day, a teenage girl in Selma, Alabama, asked its founder and editor for help.
Yes, so the Chicago Defender, which was the greatest African-American newspaper in the country in the early 20th century, they would often get letters from people who were so desperate to leave the South. The South's economic climate, the growth of Jim Crow, the terror of the KKK compelled a lot of people to say, look, I need to make a change in my life. And the Chicago Defender printed these incredible stories about all the opportunities in the North. And so what I did is I went back to look at some of those letters, and I saw that there were letters from girls 15, 16, 17 who also wanted to seek opportunities for themselves and their families in the North, and so they write to Robert Abbott asking for assistance in finding a job.
Explain what the Great Migration is all about, because I know there was two periods. It was like 1910 to 1940 and then 1940 to 1970. Explain what that is.
Yes, so scholars often think of it in terms of the first Great Migration and the second Great Migration. But between the period roughly between 1915 and 1970, you have a mass exodus of African Americans leaving the Deep South to go to northern cities like Chicago, like New York, like Pittsburgh. You
Harlem.
Also have some Western, Harlem, absolutely. And you also have some Western cities like Los Angeles getting a critical mass of African Americans who are really seeking better choices for themselves and their families through this migration process.
Well, I know the role of these very young girls were very impactful, but there were dangers surrounding them as well, especially at the beginning of the migration period.
Yeah, so girls were incredibly vulnerable both in the North and the South. And so one of the issues that comes up in my book often is girls looking for the opportunity to actually be girls. So one of the things I talk about is a lot of families are looking to leave the South because they want their children to be protected. They don't want them working in fields with adult men. They want them to have the opportunity to go to school and really enjoy those benefits that a city like Chicago had to offer. And so there were dangers in the city, in the South. And my book really talks about the kind of resilience girls needed to have, and also the adults around them taking seriously their problems and really advocating for them.
Well, there was that. And then, you know, obviously, you know, coming up North, they could make twice as much as they were making down in the South. And there were definitely different, you said safer opportunities, but there were big growth opportunities, obviously, in the North as well.
Right. And so I think what the North represented was kind of a mixed blessing. On one hand, Chicago had incredible opportunities for African Americans in terms of business, in terms of education, in terms of everyday personal autonomy and freedom, but there were also still struggles. There was still a color line in Chicago. There was still wage inequality across the racial line. And honestly, a number of families who hoped to have their girls in regular school found that because of the poor quality of Southern schools, a lot of their girls couldn't compete in Chicago public schools. So it really is a series of mixed experiences, and I try to capture in the book not just the joy and the excitement about being North, but sometimes the ambivalence and the disappointment also.
Well, there were organizations and clubs, though, that reached out to women not only to teach them and keep them safe, but, you know, just help them through kind of this transition.
Right. This book also is about the advocacy on the part of notable African-American women like Ida B. Wells Barnett, Irene McCoy Gaines. They're these great African-American women role models who step in and say, listen, we're going to really advocate for our girls in this way. And they do a number of institutions, they build them, and they really try to be a public voice for this population that they don't want to see left behind.
And there were girls, too, that were sent up north, but they were also abandoned. They didn't have their families there. What was there for them at the time? Where could they go?
The book looks at what happens when girls have no one to take care of. And one of the things I talk about was the establishment of the Amanda Smith School for Colored Girls, which is in Harvey, Illinois. I also talk about the various groups that really emerged to try to figure out the problem of unattended minors in the North, as well as orphans. And so the presence of African-American children broadly into the social services system really sets off these deep conversations about integration, about the color line in children's services, and it really galvanizes the community to make sure that they have provisions for their children.
Well, much more with Dr. Marcia Chatelain, Assistant Professor of History at Georgetown University, in her new book, Southside Girls Growing Up in the Great Migration. Great book. Next on 720 WGN. State player on 720 WGN. And we're talking to Dr. Marcia Chatelain, Assistant Professor of History at Georgetown University, and her great new book, Southside Girls Growing Up in the Great Migration. Doctor, you talk about the fact that girls shouldered much of the burden of Black aspiration as adults often scrutinized their choices and behavior, and their well-being symbolized the community's moral health. Explain that.
Well, in a lot of ways, children, because they represent the future, were often caught up in the narratives and the politics about African-American progress. So at the very moment that many are thinking to themselves, we have to go to the North to give better opportunities for our daughters, the reality of being in the North and confronting the various vices that girls kind of get engaged in, contending with the differences in the Southern versus Northern culture, I think parents and community start to say, well, is this the best thing? And so in a lot of ways, children's behavior starts to become the barometer of how far the race has come or whether people are doing a good or bad job. And I try to capture the intensity of that pressure on girls and to say, you know, we can take a step back and see that it's actually not about the kids themselves. It's about the, you know, the particular climate that everyone is trying to figure out this experience in.
Now, you know, there were obviously, you know, and you talk about this, that, you know, the important role that these young women played during the Great Migration, you know, that you were talking about, they went to school, they had clubs and organizations that they had to support them, but they too had academic and disciplinary struggles along the way.
Yes, and so I think one of the things that I thought was most interesting is that when I did my research on how schools reacted to African-American girls at their school, teachers were not entirely of a single mind about whether or not these girls could compete or whether they could be successful in Northern schools. And so I talk a little bit about some of the hesitancy on the part of white teachers to really accept African-American girls from the South in their schools and to really see their potential.
Well, you talk about that, but you also talk about the workplace, too, in the book. There, you know, there was typical racial discrimination of the day, and companies like the Chicago Telephone Company wouldn't hire Black women either. I mean, they didn't have the faith that, you know, they could work with the white women and the white workers there. I mean, there was struggles there as well.
Absolutely. So, you know, part of the dream of migration was that girls would have an opportunity to go to school and then have real choices about what they're going to do for their future. But the economic reality of Chicago during that time and of the possibilities of families, they found themselves, seeing their girls doing the kind of domestic labor that they had escaped, and they thought they were going to escape in the South. And so one of the things I capture is the deep disappointment of a number of girls who finish high school, like the Wendell Phillips High School, who, are really engaged in the possibility of what their future could be like, and they find themselves working as maids and cooks,
right.
And wondering, what was this all for?
Yeah, what's next for me? Why did I work so hard to get to this point? Absolutely. But there were campaigns later on, too, that were formed that really supported hiring of black women, like the Don't Buy Where You Can't Work. So, there were support systems in there to try to help kind of keep that, in check.
Right. There was absolutely wonderful advocacy, and I talk about the Don't Buy Where You Can't Work campaign that was really about, getting African-Americans jobs, and there was a huge scrutiny on getting teenage women jobs as clerks in stores like Woolworths. I guess I should say the old Woolworths for the younger viewers, younger listeners.
Right, yeah.
And then there was also attempts by sororities like the Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority to try to get vocational guidance, to try to encourage girls to, try fields where there are very few African Americans. And then I talk about also the National Youth Administration Resident School for Girls, which is a New Deal program that is about leadership training and about getting girls out into communities to make a difference.
What would you say are the girls' greatest impact during the Great Migration, especially the early days?
Well, the presence of African-American girls in a city like Chicago, which was really the birthplace of a lot of the social services structures that we have today, whether it's, child and infant care, whether it's juvenile courts, Chicago was really the place where a lot of these things were established. And so the presence of African-American girls actually initiated very important conversations about the nature of child and youth services, about dismantling segregation among children's organizations. A lot of the things that we attribute to the post-1954 era of the Brown v. Board of Education decision about separate but equal, a lot of that work is starting a lot earlier in Chicago. And so I talk about how these girls actually open up this huge ideological and very practical space about what to do when children are limited in their opportunities because of a nefarious racial climate.
Well, I will tell you, the book was very fascinating. Great, great historical perspective on this, and it's Southside Girls Growing Up in the Great Migration. I have to ask you, my producer was telling me that you had a little brush with WGN when you were living here in Chicago. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so everything comes full circle, doesn't it?
Right,
and
yeah.
So I, as a student at St. Ignatius College Prep, I was on a quiz bowl show called Know Your Heritage, which was an African-American history show. I think there's a version of it now. But I remember going to WGN Studios. I think it was Jim Rose, who was on ABC News at the time. I think he was the host.
Okay.
And the topic that year was the Great Migration.
Oh, how
and it
cool
was the
that?
First time that I learned about this period in history. I had no idea I'd go on to become a professional historian.
Yeah.
But I remember reading about this and thinking, this was so cool. And my team being able to go up against other high school teams on the topic.
And I don't want to place you and age or anything, but what year was that around?
All right. That must have been maybe 1995.
Okay. All right. So you passed by the Bozo set and a few other things on the way.
Oh, my gosh. And who didn't watch Bozo in the morning growing up as a kid?
That's
you
right.
Know, the Bozo Buckets game, everyone wanted, to be on the show to play
yeah.
that.
Yeah, you betcha. You betcha. A lot of history there. Very cool, though, that it was actually on this subject. That's what I find mm-hmm. fascinating. Very cool. Dr. Marcia Chatelain, assistant professor of history at Georgetown University. Book is Southside Girls Growing Up in the Great Migration. Thanks again so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. A pleasure.
All right. This Week in History coming up next, 720 WGN.